Blog Talk Radio.
There were some clouds, they were rolling through the sky, and they brought down all the rain. And there was a puddle that became a pond as it gathered up so much rain. Little seed close by grew into a tree as it soaked up so much rain.
Hello, hello. This is Thomas, the host of the Philosophy Show today. It is January the 7th, Thursday morning, Wednesday night, 12:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is episode 120. You can visit us at blogtalkradio.com/philosophy. You can visit one of my YouTube channels at youtube.com/blastoffreshair. And today's episode, I titled it, Alex Jones says he has inside info, so trust Donald Trump, comma, Stefan Molyneux has a high IQ, comma, Australia and their gun policy compared to the USA, and what is real strength? And that's a lot to fit into half an hour. This is a half an hour show. It's a call-in show. Feel free to call in. And if I have time, I might talk about that Oregon stuff, but that might have to say that for next week. So sometimes I go over conspiracies, quotes of the week, advice of the week, philosophy, of course, reviews, news, current events, politics, love advice, etc., and whatever your calls may consist of. And if you have a show idea, definitely love to hear those and share those. So the half an hour really goes by pretty quick. I mean, we can start with the first one, and this is a wide range of ideas or topics here. And so let's start. All right. So anyways, Alex Jones says to trust Trump. He's almost convinced, like 99.something% or 90% convinced Trump is the candidate. And I'm going to show some what I see as pros and cons of the Trump. But start with the cons. I mean, you have insider info that Trump is for real. I mean, I don't know what that means. I mean, to me, that almost sounds like three-dimensional chess, which we're not supposed to trust. I mean, people thought Obama was a constitutional scholar and you know, but he's just playing the game. So once he really gets inside, he's going to do some justice. You know, I'm not going to rely on insider information. And, you know, I want to see, you're supposed to be vetted before the election. It's not like Nancy Pelosi said, you'll have to read the bill after it's been passed. You're supposed to read the bill before it's passed so you can be informed and educated before you vote on something. You know, you're supposed to read the contract before you sign it. That's what someone with self-respect and does. Let me share the pros and cons of what I see that I can see and actually vet and get my own information on, and that's actually out there in the media and is documented. I'm not going to depend on three-dimensional chess because that's, we've seen where that's gotten us in the past. And, so I have like, six cons here and a bunch of pros as well, or seven cons. You know, he hasn't had a good record on eminent domain. He's used the power of the government to try to take other people's properties in New Jersey and Scotland. There's a movie on it called Trumped. There's other episodes. John Stossel's done a 2020 or John Stossel show on it, where you try to use the weight, the muscle, the, you know, the government to try to kick people out of their home so he could put up, you know, a casino or something. And, you know, I don't really like that. And he said recently in a speech that whoever is prosecuted of killing a cop is definitely going to get the death penalty. Now, I don't have so much a problem with that if they're completely just like anyone else who kills anyone. I mean, you know, if you're against hate crimes, you're against it because every crime should be a hate crime, right? Well, the same thing with the cops. They're not better than anyone else. I mean, I do think if someone kills, you know, an innocent police officer that, you know, and they're found guilty with a fair trial, or if they admit it, or something that's obvious, I mean, I think that should be the standard for the death penalty anyways, you know, because nowadays we've seen so many cases that have been overturned with DNA and stuff, but I think it's something's obvious or the person confesses to it. You know, there are some scenarios for it, and anyone should. So every crime's a hate crime, and so it shouldn't be particular just to cops, but, you know, he was pandering to them and, you know, pandering to the arm of the government. And then he also said, you know, well, some of his supporters, like Michael Savage, and I've heard some other ones say that, you know, they said Obama's done so much damage, we should have Trump rule by decree. And that's exactly the exact wording and language that Hitler used after the Reichstag fire, that to rule by decree. Yeah, I don't like the idea of people wanting Trump to rule by decree. And they asked him, you know, is he going to be one of those presidents that uses a lot of executive orders, the same thing that people are upset about Obama doing? Or can he pledge that he's not going to? I mean, and he never mentions the Bill of Rights or the Constitution. I've never heard him mention it once. Not once, not even lip service to it. And, you know, people have asked him what he thinks about the Bible and stuff like that. Well, this is a secular government. Why not ask him, what do you think about the Bill of Rights and Constitution? What does it mean to you? Now, Alex Jones, in an interview, to be fair, asked him who was his favorite president. And kind of like that Bible question, you know, he just chose, yeah, well, you know, I guess I'll just go with George Washington or something. I mean, and he, you know, it's, I don't know. I mean, George Washington, good president, but I'll let that one go. But, you know, and, you know, who cares about that, really, quite honest. But what does he think about the Constitution, the Bill of Rights? What do they mean? Why are they there? You know, what do you think about free speech? Because another thing he said was he was thinking that, you know, some parts of the internet should be blocked. And I say if someone's stupid enough to list their evil plans, good, go catch them. Don't discourage people from doing that. Let's encourage everyone to do that so they're easily, I mean, if they're going to put the evidence against themselves right up there, then great. You know, don't discourage that. Encourage that. You want the dumb criminals to divulge all their plans and who they are. He said we don't need a minimum wage increase. He can't do it in this country. I mean, you know, honestly, if we had a true free market economy, I would say we wouldn't even need a minimum wage. But in this rigged economy, yeah, since this deck's stacked against us until we get to our laissez-faire harmonious world, then yeah, the minimum wage needs to be increased. It's like if it kept up with like 1960s levels, I mean, it'd be above like $14 an hour right now. And he also says that he will hire people from Wall Street in his administration and help out the oil companies. I mean, you know, that's not cool. And then recently in a Fox News interview, he said he might go to war with Iran for Saudi Arabia, not for us, but to protect Saudi Arabia. Now, I know he might be playing politics there because part of Fox News is owned by some people in Saudi Arabia. And maybe he knows that and he's just playing politics. But again, it's that three-dimensional chess. And, you know, he did answer it in kind of a political way. Maybe he was. But I don't know. Should we depend on someone playing politics to know what their true intentions are? Now, here's some positive things I do like about him. It's not all, I'm being fair here. It could be all politics. And that is almost what you have to do to run for president. You're going to have to play some politics and BS a little bit. It's just, you know, pretty much it. And he's good at it. He does support gun rights, it seems. You know, he is pretty smart. He said he would put an extra tax on Wall Street. He was against the Iraq war from the beginning. he demolishes the rest of the Republicans, which needs to be done. I mean, they need to be outed for who they are, and so does the media, which he's doing a great job of. I mean, that's almost worth it in itself, and I commend him for doing that. He does a great job at it. He should continue full speed ahead to do that. He doesn't like the trade deals. Now, I don't know what he would do in return, but they would just all support Trump and the big companies, or because Obama said he was going to renegotiate NAFTA when he was running. He said he was going to redo NAFTA and get us out of some of these trade deals. He never even thought about doing that. I never heard him talk about that, but that was one of the big things he got big cheers for and stuff. So we'll see. Although he did write the book, The Art of the Deal, right? So, and, you know, he does have to play 3D chess, like I said before. Before he was running for president, he did support a universal health care. He was actually for that. And he would get rid of Obamacare, which I think is a disaster, honestly. I mean, it's like Romney Care, and it's what the Republicans once supported. I do think we should have a Medicare for all. Again, I think in a free market system, if we really had one, you'd probably be able to buy plans for like $300 a year for like a good catastrophic plan with a low deductible, which most of these Obamacare plans have like $5,000 deductibles and stuff. If you want to get something affordable, if you have like a living wage, I mean, and Trump used to be against the drug war back in the 90s or something. He said it was stupid. He's kind of changed his tune in the Republican race. But again, maybe that's playing politics. You'll see in the general election what he says about it. But and keep in mind, in the general election, I wouldn't put it past him to totally go into the middle. And, you know, and I think the thing that dumb Democrats don't get is they think it's all a vote for Trump. No, it's not. It's a rejection of the Republican Party, and you don't totally get that. And that's the thing I hate about the Democrats. Whenever they lose, they say like, oh, we should, you know, we have the right policies, but the people just didn't understand. We didn't explain it better. No, they don't. They're too arrogant to ever accept that. No, we don't like your gun-grabbing, stupid, you know, private-public partnership policies and these rip me off trade deals either, and just, you know, how fake you are and everything. Like, instead of, you know, Obama is the one who totally bailed out Wall Street in the trillions of dollars, but let, you know, the people get to renegotiate some interest rates, and so did the Congress too. So it's not all him, and so has past administrations as well. So one good thing, I think, just to be fair, what Obama has done, he has had that thing on the website where you can post up petitions and stuff, and I think that is a really good thing. But, yeah, I mean, the bailouts were, why not just bail the people out, and then the people can be able to continue paying their mortgages and stuff, and then the banks and the people would win instead of just having the banks win and not the people. It doesn't make any sense unless if your main supporters are Goldman Sachs and so is a lot of people in your administration and so on and on from Monsanto and et cetera. And that's exactly what Hillary is going to have. I hate to disappoint Hillary supporters out there. But don't worry, we're going to rag on the Republicans as well here. That's that. Now, we'll get Bernie Sanders. Australian guns, people always, you know, there's a lot of talk about gun rights and stuff now, gun control and gun rights, Second Amendment. A lot of people point to Australia that, like, after their last massacre, they passed some really strict gun laws, and they haven't had any mass shootings then. But, you know, there's a classic way of troubleshooting something. If you bring your car into the mechanic and it's making a sputtering noise and you have to go to the mechanic and they ask you to describe the noise and you have to be like, you know, or something like that. And they say, I didn't quite hear that. Can you describe that again for me? And they're all like snickering in the background as you're making car noises. Then, a lot of news reporters don't report, like let's say they were diagnosing the problem. if they really want to know what the problem is, like if they didn't have to have this car out by 6 p.m. tonight, but if they really wanted to know what the problem was, they would fix one thing at a time. Otherwise, if they do two fixes at once, you don't know if it was because of the one thing or the other thing because you did two things. So let's say they, you know, reset the computer on the car and then they also change the air filter. Well, if the car runs better now, you can't really say it was the air filter or resetting of the computer because you did them both at the same time. Now, if you did one at a time, then you could say conclusively it was one or the other. Not that this even matters, because to change the Second Amendment, you need to pass the constitutional amendment. Around the same time when they passed those gun laws, there's a couple other differences in Australia besides the U.S., so it's not quite a scientific, double-blind study test. They also raised the minimum wage dramatically at that time, about a year or two after or thereabouts. And you don't think that has an effect on societal violence? I'm sure it does. So it's about $14 or $15 an hour now. It keeps up with inflation, so it automatically goes up. And that's one thing Ben Carson supported, surprisingly. And then they also have, subsidized education for all. And they have universal health care. And those three things combined, I would say violence and poor education causes crime. I mean, in a nutshell, I mean, we can talk about that, but I think that's a consensus. And, if you have a working wage, minimum wage, universal health care and education for all, and their economy has like a way lower unemployment rate than ours, then you're going to have a lot less violence. And it's like they pass those things the same time as the gun law. So like the troubleshooting thing, you don't know if it's the air filter or what. I say it's the minimum wage, the health care, and the education for all the reason why they don't have the societal violence, and a lot of other countries as well. And then so, we got about 13 more minutes here. So this is the philosophy show. Now, on to the next subject. Real quick, I'll just mention one thing that pissed me off. Like, okay, so maybe Trump is the best candidate for the Republican Party. I would say Rand Paul. I mean, and he really needs to kick it into gear in Iowa if he wants to do something. But how about, Alex Jones should back off of Bernie Sanders, though. I mean, we don't want Clinton. I mean, it's thankfully Trump has, pretty much finished Bush. So at least, because my biggest scare at the beginning of the election season was it's going to be Clinton versus Bush. And now it's possible we could get rid of both, at least support Bernie Sanders. So there's not a Clinton running, I mean, please, Clinton could win against Trump and Trump could win against Clinton. Who knows? But at least if it's Sanders versus Trump, we're not going to have a possibility of a Bush versus a Clinton. And Bernie is not any more socialist than anyone else. I mean, he wants to break up the banks. He wants to also change the trade deals. He wants to lower down unnecessary, unconstitutional wars. He's for the people. He, wants transparency, privacy. He wants to end the drug war and private prisons. He has all like individual donors. I mean, this is a good guy, whether you agree with him or not. I mean, you've interviewed people like Dennis Kucinich, and why not support Bernie Sanders? He helped the bill to audit the Fed, the Federal Reserve. I mean, I think we could have a lot, lot worse. And I do think we should focus on Congress a lot more. Now, one real quick thing I did write in here, what is strength? Is, Republicans love strength, and so does the rest of America. I would say strength is when George Washington stepped down after his second term, when John Adams, John F. Kennedy wrote a book called Profiles in Courage, and that's standing up against the crowd, against the mainstream, against the mob, not being able to be the black, being afraid to be the black sheep, per se, and being able to admit when you're wrong, being open and transparent, naked in front of the world, being fair, objective, even if it goes against your interest, but for the truth, you know, the principles of the Bill of Rights, you know, we don't have to be sneaking around in the world. I mean, it's kind of like a football strategy. You know, you can play a West Coast offense and this little dilly-dally here and there, or you can just keep running it down the freaking middle till their, you know, defensive line's tired, and then, you know, throw a couple of passes here. I'd say, you know, let's be totally transparent and open. We have nothing to hide. Put everything out in the public, and let's, you know, when we debate other countries, you know, if we're on the right side of history, then we should have nothing to be scared of, like countries like Iran and stuff. And but we shouldn't even be there in the first place, and just run it right down the middle and give them the playbook. Here's the playbook, and we're going to run it right down the middle. That would be my strategy for defense. Now, I did have here Stefan Molyneux has a high IQ. A lot of his shows recently have been about IQ. I did want to mention a couple points to mention. Maybe you've heard that, seen some of his shows. He has a like a philosophy show, so I kind of wanted to talk about the issues. It's not really about him. It's always, or anyone else, it's about the issues, and that's what we want to make it about. I will say some things about him, though. I do have him linked on one of my favorite channels on my YouTube channel. He is good at principles. In fact, he has some great older episode of his where he goes over the history of philosophy and different types of philosophical arguments, which I think is, they're really good ones. He's a great orator. He's good at bringing things up to move the discussion going forward. He has good production of shows. And, you know, I mean, he's a good orator. He could have been probably a good lawyer. And he's trying to champion certain items. So he might, you know, run on them for a while. And so he selects an issue here and there, and then he goes with that issue, kind of like an actor goes into a character. So, you know, I've seen him on interviewed with like Joe Rogan, where, you know, he probably would be more personable to a lot of people. But this IQ thing, I can see it really turning a lot of people up and off, and that's why I'm like, want to talk about it. Some points to mention about that. I mean, some people might be put off, and maybe he's just talking about it because if he talks about IQ a lot, it might attract higher IQ people who have higher incomes, and he'll get more donations, right? So if you, you know, and that's why some people move towards Republican side, like Alex Jones and stuff, because he probably knows they donate more money and stuff like that, which I have seen him kind of move a little bit to the right. But he's, again, he's playing three-dimensional chess to bring them into the fold. Then he can bring up other issues that will make them more, you know, their ears open to it. But so he claims to be talking about IQ because it's not only interesting, but it's how we've affected policies in America. So what are the consequences, I have to ask? If you're making a national discussion about IQ and you're claiming different groups of people conclusively have different IQs based on, who, you know, the group that they're in, or race or gender or whatever is what he's claiming, then our policy should affect that. But I think the reverse point, he's trying to play reverse psychology here. He's trying to make the point where we shouldn't have government policies at all, and the free market will just work it out. And in a sense, the free market is a great equalizer, I would say. It's the most fairest place. It lets anyone, you know, supposedly the myth about it is at least that lets anyone rise up, and you're based on your contribution to society. And so there's no talk about this IQ or anything like that. You know, if you're good at what you do, you could be conscientious with a lower IQ but still succeed higher than someone with a higher one. And so, you know, supposedly, from charts I've seen, like about 2% of the population has an IQ of like 55 to 70, 13.5 from about 70 to 85, 68% is from like 85 to 115, about half in each slot. And then another 13.5 from 115 to 130, and above 130, you're in the 2%, and above 145, you're like in the 0.0000001%. But still, it could be significant numbers with, you know, high populations. But so he's trying to make the point, like, you know, people who have a 70 IQ, you know, if we actually accepted that certain people do, then that should change the policies, because they should never be expected to pass SAT scores, like for education, or maybe, you know, who knows, one way it could have lots of possibilities. Maybe they shouldn't be allowed to, you know, have birth, and they would be more of a cost to society, or, you know, I don't know exactly what he's saying, but I think he's just trying to open up the discussion. And then he does say the exception, there's always exceptions, about a 15% exception in every group or whatever that can be, you know, very smart. But, and it is, you know, something to think about for sure. And I do appreciate it, but there's really only two main policies I think he could be talking about, and that's affirmative action and welfare. So let's look at those two policies. I mean, now, number one, affirmative action wasn't about IQ or anything. It was about, for the days of slavery, it's more about justice and acknowledgement of that and a way to pay people back. Now, people said, have made proposals to change that to, like, you know, increasing education for everyone, or just some payback. I mean, that's what it was. I know it's been expanded to lots of other groups, but and then welfare would be another one. I mean, now, does the First Amendment apply? Now, he would say those are all rights. Those aren't things that cost the government, but the welfare is what matters. And then some other arguments is, it seems like everyone's IQ keeps going up a couple of points every generation. And what about the corporate welfare? I mean, talking about priorities, who takes trillions? I mean, what about the military industrial complex? What about the banks? I mean, and they probably have a high IQ. So I guess they're smart and they're stealing all our money. And what if the people who had the high IQ decided to, you know, make the affirmative action into law? Maybe they know something you don't. I mean, you know, so just like, you know, people of 100 IQ would be, I guess, what, get tired of, you know, carrying on their backs people who have 70 points IQ. What about the people who have like 130 or something? I mean, maybe they would be tired of the 100 IQ people. Should we all be like worker bees? I mean, should that be the government policy and we're just assigned by birth? And what about the DNA in the future? You know, we're going to have designer people like that movie Gattaca. You know, that's really what's going to change things in the future. And should people have a right to be born with a high IQ? Is that the only thing that matters? I mean, I don't think so. And I don't think it's been fully studied what can affect it. And one of the arguments he was saying is that it could change a lot in 700 years. Then we shouldn't be focused on just what's happening nowadays. What if we can encourage people, let's say, for the sake of argument, with a lower IQ to have a higher one in the future? We don't know what the change of, let's say, people going from a third world country to a first world country with high computers and education. And, you know, I mean, we say people evolved by having to have agriculture and cold climates. Well, what about people evolving in, you know, the unprecedented society we're in now? How do we know that's not going to, you know, by amplitude, you know, evolve people into the future? So we might be creating a more advanced person, but it's going to take 200 to 300 years to see it. And so what's wrong with doing that in the first place? So maybe there is a higher IQ plan to it all. And it's, you know, but I don't know. There's a lot to discuss there. We have less than 60 seconds left, so we'll have to continue this next week. So maybe we'll talk about the IQ thing a little bit. Antinatalism, who knows? I mean, thanks for listening to the Philosophy Show, and I hope you have a great week. Take care. Until then.